Back together again, you and I chatting it up Tuesday style, the 14th of April, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today, where I ruffled a few feathers with my support for a proposal to spend $12 million to extend free school breakfast to every state school district in Connecticut. Active duty police officer and GOP state rep Greg Howard dropped by the show to talk about being featured in a recent Hartford Current article as a member of law enforcement trying to make many of the laws that he's charged with enforcing. Sacred Heart University Associate Professor of Catholic Studies, Dr. Daniel Rober, returned to the show discussing the current war of words between President Trump and Pope Leo XIV, while Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio explained the details behind a new bill at the Capitol concerning so-called internet deepfakes.
Oh, man, are some people mad at me already? I started getting the snide comments. Maybe I shouldn't say snide, because everybody is entitled to an opinion. I may agree or may not agree, but it's what this program is about here. Hi, it's Connecticut Today with your old buddy Paul Pacelli here. But boy, no sooner than a few minutes ago than when I put up our question of the day, man, am I getting torched on this one? Now, if you want to torch me, you're more than welcome to do that. Absolutely. Come on in. The water's fine. No lakes swimming here. No, where the water is not out in the ocean. It's not in a fishing hole with, flesh-eating bacteria, brain-eating amoebas. No, come on in. The water's fine. We use lots of chemicals here in our lounging water on Connecticut Today. And I'm talking about something that I spoke about a little bit yesterday, but there's more coverage of it today. We'll get to that. Free school breakfasts in Connecticut. I love the idea. I honestly do. I really do. Well, it's going to cost money, Paul. Well, yeah, Einstein, everything costs money. Well, it's $12 million. All right, to you and I, that's a lot of money, right? Okay, I get it. I'd be the first one to say, hey, let's not treat it like $12 million is, something out of the ATM here. But a panel this week has talked about nothing is free, but let's say a no cost to the kids, a no-cost school breakfast program. And it would be a cost of $12 million. Now, this past Monday, Lieutenant Governor Susan Bicewicz, Chris just mentioned her in the news for a completely different story, she hosted a panel discussion on a proposal from her and from Governor Lamont that the governor spend $12 million of state money. And yes, that's taxpayer money. Those are taxpayer funds. That's, in a sense, my money and your money. $12 million to help every school district provide breakfast to each student. Now, about one-third of the state districts already do this. I just want to learn you something here. So this is now, well, look at Lamont. He's just pissing away our money. Well, no. So far, 202 school districts in the state, 63 of them already do no cost or free breakfast. She estimated that 164,000 more students would get access to free breakfast under the proposal. Miranda Muro, M-U-R-O here, in the Connecticut News Junkie, she represents Food Share. They've been on this radio station a lot over the years. Who hasn't talked to the fine folks at Food Share? She says that her organization was seeing an unprecedented demand between housing, health care, child care, you name it. She said, quote, people are having trouble and they're making tough decisions. I have no problem with this, really. And I know there is a notion that people say, well, all right, give it to students in New Haven, give it to students in Bridgeport, give it to low-income students in minority areas, but you know, the other students are going to have to pay. So wait a minute now. You want students in certain schools to carry around what? A card or a scarlet letter so the other kids can laugh at them? Because that's essentially, oh yeah, you know how kids are. We all were a kid at one time. And before we had the morals and the reasoning to understand, maybe we didn't get to that age yet where certain kids have more at home than, whether it's emotional support, parents, or just flat-out money, cashola, the green Jesus, than others, they're going to be ridiculed. I have no problem with this. Are you okay with this? In East Hartford, the superintendent of schools there, Thomas Anderson, saying the program there that they use that does 48,000 breakfasts a month also had benefits beyond nutrition. More than half of the students took advantage of the meal program. He said, quote, if we can get them in the morning to take advantage of the free meal, that means they're going to be there all day. Eddie Diaz, a social worker in Hartford, said what may first appear to be behavioral problems is just the kids are hungry. I mean, you know, but for the grace of God, go us or we or yous or me, whatever, where we can go home and, you know, open the cabinets or crank up the toaster oven or crank up the oven and just eat something. But a lot of these kids in an incredibly rich state take advantage of free breakfast. Well, you know, Paul, the only reason they're doing it is their mothers are telling them, hey, I don't want to pay for breakfast. Go do it at school. Okay, so what? What's the big freaking deal? I don't understand here. Would it be ideal if we didn't have to provide breakfast? Would it be ideal if you had a scenario where every single parent of every single kid in every single school district did a well-balanced breakfast for their kid every morning? Yeah, everybody would do that. Oh, yeah, that'd be Shangri-La, wouldn't it? But it doesn't happen here. So you tell me, am I wrong here? I don't think I am, frankly. I don't see the big deal. Again, $12 million in and of itself, in an aggregate total, yeah, it's a lot of money. But isn't that money well spent? Other states do this as well. Why can't we? Or are you like a lot of people I'm hearing from online and on my social media saying, no, sorry, I don't want to pay for any kid to have breakfast. So is that what you're saying? Because sure sounds like it. You don't want to pay for any kids to make sure that their school day is off to a good start? I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, twist the knife here, but $12 million in a $28 billion budget is like 0.0004%. So what do you think? Question of the day, we begin with it right here. Do you support using $12 million of state money to pay for universal daily breakfasts in every Connecticut school district? I have no problem with this. I don't. I have no problem. Because, listen, we all know that by the human condition, there are some dirtbag parents out there that aren't feeding their kids in the morning. Or maybe they're throwing them a buck and say, yeah, go to the vending machine at school. No. Let's get out in front of this. And like one of those experts said, let's make sure all the kids have their Cap'n Crunch and their Count Chocula. I'm kidding. God, there'd be a revolt on that. Sugared cereal and full-fat milk. That's what we need. All right, up and underway here. You let me know, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Loosen up and buy the kids breakfast. Imagine if your mother's a crack addict. No, I'm dead serious. And she's out of it, or an alcoholic, or just, you know, you don't think there's a percentage of parents out there that send their kids to school without any food or with a buck or two and say, hey, go buy your, don't expect me to fix your breakfast. No, I'm dead serious here. See, this is why I'm all for this. Hey, how are you? 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Look, we waste more in the state budget. We have to. We waste a lot more than $12 million. So the governor wants to add $12 million to the kitty and make sure that all kids in Connecticut get a universal breakfast. Now, so far, 63 of the state's 202 school districts do that. If you add the $12 million in from the state, that would help another 164,000 more students. I have no problem with this. None whatsoever. And you know, I rarely come on and cheer more spending on this show. I just, as a matter of course, I think we either spend enough money or we spend enough money, but it's not always directed at the right things. This is. Now, before we go to the phones here, or you can text me at 333-9422-333-WICC. And you're going to throw some barb at me. Are you? You want to just feed kids with state money? Yeah, I do. What's wrong with that, Einstein? Nine states in the present school year have implemented permanent universal free meals. They offer breakfast and lunch to all students regardless of income. You can't do an income cutoff. You can't. Or have a kid with a special card. Oh, look, and then get laughed at. Oh, look, Joey has one of those poor kids cards. You can't do that. So the states that already do this are Colorado, Maine, California, Massachusetts, Michigan, Minnesota, New Mexico, New York, and Vermont. So Connecticut wouldn't be groundbreaking here. And I know what you're saying. Well, it's an election year. He's just trying to buy votes. All right, maybe he is. So nine states, Michigan, Massachusetts, Maine, Colorado, California, New York, Vermont, New Mexico, and Minnesota do breakfast and lunch. Pennsylvania only does breakfast. Other states are considering doing it, including the state of Hawaii. So there you go. I'm all for this. You don't think we waste $12 million out of almost $30 billion a year on crap that we shouldn't be paying for? Come on. Listen, I'd be even more in favor of it if they made it, you know, so you could get Captain Crunch, Count Chocula, Boo Berries. What am I missing here? Honey Nut Clusters. Let's just load them kids up with as much sugar as humanly possible. Get them all groggy and stuff. Sugar does not make you jumpy. People say, oh, the kids are wired on sugar. No, sugar slows you down. No. You want to get them wired? Give them a nicotine pack. I'm kidding. It's a joke. Calm down. I don't want the kids to start using snuff or vaping nicotine. Calm down. And right now, the phone's ringing to the boss's office. Do you hear what this man is saying on the radio? Oh, man. Dave and Meriden starts us off today. Dave, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Paul. I agree with you. If we can spend enough money for this no-show hack, Chang, and the guy that took his place to that kind of salary, then we have to feed the kids. I mean, come on. My grandkids, you know, they go to school in Meriden.
Yeah.
And they have free breakfast and lunch.
Okay.
Now, my grandkids come over to our house. They have breakfast at our house every morning.
Yeah.
Not my grandson now because he goes to middle school.
Okay.
So he's at home.
Yeah.
But they do feed him. But there are parents, like you say, crack addicts, people that are hungover.
Yeah.
They're not feeding kids. And, you know, you tell me, you look at a little kid going to school hungry. I mean, how can you even think of something like that?
Yeah, yeah. So do your grandkids, so, Dave, it's available if they want. So do they ever partake of the breakfast or not? Maybe when you're not around?
I don't know. They may grab a pastry or something like that once in a while. But as far as I know, I don't think so, because they eat pretty good at our
house. Okay.
So go on a full stomach.
Oh, nice, nice. You giving them, like, Captain Crunch and Honey Nut Cheerios?
No, no. Waffles and bagels. And
look at that. Wow.
But in the summertime, too, Meriden at the schools hand out lunches during the summer as well.
Wow, that's good.
The kids, at least during the summer.
Yeah, Dave, thank you. Appreciate it. And I mean, look, I've had friends who've told me, yeah, you know, my first couple of periods are brutal because half the kids in there are hungry and we don't do breakfast. So I'm all in favor of it as long as I can have input on the menu. Hey, what day is it at school today? It's Wednesday. Yes, Captain Crunch, Honey Nut Cheerios, Honey Nut Clusters, yes. Let's get as much, let's give those kids as much processed sugar as we can. If you have a paper copy, yes, there are still physical papers around, not many. There are 5 or 10 more years, you won't have them. But if you have a copy of the paper around, or you look at yesterday's Hartford Current, Libby Stanford's story here, just two Connecticut legislators also enforce the laws they create. Man, we need that in Congress. What they have to say about their rare roles. Picture the two gentlemen there. One is Democratic State Rep Michael D. Giovancarlo of Waterbury. And the other is State Rep Greg Howard, Republican of Stonington. We've had Greg on the show numerous times, so we want them to have him back and talk about this story in particular. Hey, Greg, it's Paul again. Good afternoon. How are you, man?
Good afternoon, sir. Thanks for having me. How are you?
Good. How are you handling your newfound fame? Yeah, you got. Greg, are you signing 8x10s anywhere? Can I get?
yeah, sure. Something like that.
Yeah. Who? The Current, I guess, approached you and Mr. Giovancarlo about this. How did this come about?
Yeah, the Current reaches out to me often. That particular reporter reaches out to me often on a variety of issues. She recently started covering the legislature, and she just found it interesting that we're both active duty police officers and wanted to run a story. So we sat with her for probably the better part of an hour.
Wow.
I think. And, you know, answered a ton of questions and talked to her about, you know, how our experience as law enforcement officers has been beneficial to us in the legislature, what it means regarding police bills, et cetera.
Yeah, you know, Greg, and you and I have talked about this before when it comes to the marijuana bill or drinking or road takeovers. Despite the tension that's often portrayed, the legislature, you 151 guys and gals in the State House and 36 others in the higher chamber of the Senate, you've all got to get along. But I would imagine, as your compatriot here out of Waterbury would say, there must be times when you hear stuff in a committee debate on a bill or on a general vote and just say to yourself, well, all right, in theory, that sounds good. But I've done motor vehicle stops, or your friend has done motor vehicles, and no, it just doesn't really work out that way, right?
That's exactly right, and you know, that's what we sort of bring. But I also should say, Paul, and that's not specific to us. I mean, we have teachers that bring sort of experience to the Education Committee.
Yeah.
We have doctors that bring that experience to the Public Health Committee. We have lawyers, naturally, plenty of them. We have business owners and landlords who bring their respective experiences, restaurant owners, et cetera, et cetera. And that's what's great about having the part-time legislature, is that you have all these individuals that are actively doing jobs out in their community or involved in different fields and have levels of expertise. But, you know, police work is sort of the more sensational, one of the more sensational things that we talk about up there. You know, it dominates the media more so than any other profession, naturally, because when big incidents take place, the police are always there, right? So so it does do that. And I think, you know, we really do try to let, you know, bring in the difference between the reality and the myth of what's going on. And I think that that's what's important.
Yeah, Officer D. Giovancarlo said this. I find this interesting, Greg. I want to get your take on it. He said, quote, "They expect us to be robots with no feelings and to never make a mistake. You're asked to do 10 to 20 more things that policing didn't have to do 40 or 50 years ago." What do you mean by that?
Well, that's
that
was a joint conversation. Yeah. We both sort of agreed to that same statement. And the bottom line is when you take out the human factor, right? And you take out the human factor when you say the police or the cops, and you don't talk about the policeman or the policewoman. You know what I mean? And I said to an advocate one day, said, you know, you should stop calling people inmates. You should call them incarcerated people because it brings a human factor. And I said, well, that's fine, but why do you say cops all the time? And she said, well, I guess you're right. And I said, well, exactly. I mean, the bottom line is, you know, you do that. And I think when you look on paper and say, well, the police can do this and the police can do that, These are human beings, and you know, they're first of all, and they have human minds and human emotions, and I think they lose track of that. And you know, I don't know if she put it in the report or not, but it's a very notable statistic that it's something like 400 to 1 the amount of traumatic stress incidents a police officer faces as opposed to an average human being.
Wow.
You know, that is a major thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you're doing that every day, you're going out in your communities, whether it's Waterbury for him or Stonington for me or Hartford or New Haven or Southington or any of the Wallingford, you name it, any of the, you know, the 90-some police departments that exist in the state and, of course, the state police as well. You send these officers out to these, you know, incidents. You ask them to, you know, despite the fact they're human beings, see, you know, unseeable things and react and be efficient and proficient in their everyday life when they do these things that nobody else wants to do or face. And then at the end of the day, they're disparaged up in the legislature. And that is, you know, sort of the point that we were starting to bring home. And it's not just legislature. The media is guilty of this, too. And, you know, to the point that we're trying to bring home is, you know, they're overwhelmingly police officers in this state do a good job, and they need to be, you know, heralded in that way, because it's fine to hold police officers to a higher standard when they do something incorrectly, but hold them to a high standard when they're doing it right, because we're asking a lot of them. You know, we're facing a recruitment issue in the state, a retention issue. The governor has recognized that and put bills forward. And a big part of it has to do with that. We didn't have these recruitment and retention issues before 2020.
Really?
Wow. You know, and so it's, you know, big cities. I think Waterbury is doing pretty well right now. They've done some different things, but big cities like Bridgeport down by you, Norwich out here by me, are down 25% of officers. And that has an exponential effect, and folks need to understand that, because unlike a restaurant or a business, the police department can't close because of a lack of staffing. That's not a reality, right?
Hey, Greg, we'll be back tomorrow morning at 8, yeah.
Yeah, right. So what happens is, you know, you get officers ordered in, so they're working 7 days a week, 16 hours a day sometimes. And that just increases the burnout, increases the amount of incidents they're going to, the trauma that they're seeing, the tired, the stress at home from not being home, and you know, feeling like, hey, I'm not being a good mom or a good dad because I'm at work all the time. I'm not being a good husband or a good wife because I'm at work all the time. You know, and then that leads to further, you know, what we call premature attrition. In other words, people leaving the profession before they're 20 or 25 years. Mm-hmm. So that becomes an exponential problem when you have, you know, the low recruitment and retention and a deficiency in personnel.
Republican State Rep Greg Howard, Republican Stonington, the subject, along with Democrat Michael DiGiovancarlo, both gentlemen, active duty police officers, two of the men who have to enforce the laws that we talk about and are written and passed in Hartford. Hey, Greg, take care, my friend. Appreciate the time. Thanks, man.
All right, Paul, anytime. Thank you.
I appreciate it right now, and I will make an effort to get Officer DiGiovancarlo on the show, too. Want to talk to him. He's a Waterbury Democrat. All right, a lot of Catholics around Connecticut, I would imagine. Even in a blue state, you would have some Catholics who voted for President Trump maybe once, twice, three times, I don't know. And has he crossed a line with his language directed at Pope Leo XIV and some social media posts that he put out? Some people saying that you know, he's trying to make himself out to be Jesus. The president is saying, well, no, I was just trying to be a doctor. I thought it was a doctor, whatever. So the idea of this and popes getting their views out on issues of war and humanity and all this, nothing new, but let's talk about that. Return visit. We had this gentleman on last year. Dr. Daniel Rober is with us, Sacred Heart University Associate Professor of Catholic Studies. Back on the program, Dr. Roberts, Paul here again. How are you? Great to have you back. How are you?
Great to be with you, Paul. Great to talk to you. Happy to expound a bit on what's going on with Trump and Pope Leo.
Yeah, so let's talk about, before we parse this down, Dr. Rober, I'm Catholic, raised Catholic, former altar boy here you're talking to. The Pope, Dr. Rober, any Pope weighs in on war. It happens all the time. I'd be concerned if a pope didn't say anything. So in that extent, is there any real surprise here what the Holy Father said?
No. I mean, the most recent precedent that I think is worthwhile is in 2003 when the Bush administration took the U.S. into the Iraq War. They made overtures. First of all, that war, what everyone thinks of it now, the administration did a lot more kind of groundwork laying both among the public and other institutions to justify what they were doing. And one of the things they did was make overtures through people like Michael Novak, who was a intellectual who was close to the Bush administration, to Pope John Paul II to explain their rationale and try to get his kind of blessing for it, to which he said, no, this is not a justified reason to go to war. And relations remained cordial. There was no, you know, George W. Bush didn't come out and say, that, you know, that the Pope was weak or that there was some problem with this, right? They just kind of moved on, did what they were going to do. So, there's lots of precedent. And going back, certainly, especially to Pope Paul VI in 1965, he gave a famous speech at the UN, the first time the Pope visited the UN. And he said, never again war. Pope Leo has quoted that speech multiple times. So, yeah, not surprising at all.
Yeah, and you know, Dr. Roper, knowing that we were going to talk today, I was always taught growing up as a Catholic that whether it's Catholic doctrine or just the doctrine of morality, there is the theory of a just war. Like, nobody wants to kill anybody, but the theory of a just war. But it's a pretty convoluted but well laid out theory amongst Catholicism and Catholics and Catholic dogma that what's the belief that this should be an absolute last resort? But then people would say, well, wait a minute, you have the Iranian regime here that has been a murderous regime for 40 or 50 years. So you see where I'm going here. Does any of that square up or not?
Sure. So again, like the two basic points about just war theory to keep in mind, right, is you had to have a good reason to go to war. Mm-hmm. And then when you're conducting a war, you have to have basically proper conduct.
Yeah.
In other words, like only targeting military targets, right? Using proportionate force and all this, right? Again, to go to the first point, Pope Leo, like Pope Francis, has argued pretty strongly that the argument for a just war in today's world is pretty narrow, right?
Mm-hmm.
That mostly countries should be able to work things out before getting to a situation of war, right? And as you might recall, the U.S. and the Iranians had worked out a deal in 2013 that President Trump in his first term walked away from.
Mm-hmm.
Related to precisely some of these issues. There was no imminent threat of the Iranian regime to the United States. On that basis, right, and nor did the administration try to make the case that there was an imminent threat. So a lot of the rationales about the regime being bad and all this are kind of backfilling, right, explaining that, well, here was a good reason to go to war. But there are lots of unjust regimes in the world that do terrible things to their citizens. But the U.S. does not have an interest in going to war with all of them. And if it did, the administration would be more unpopular than it is. And this war has been quite unpopular since it started.
Dr. Daniel Roper, the guest, Sacred Heart University Associate Professor of Catholic Studies. Dr. Roper, even if it was done in jest or tongue-in-cheek, the image of President Trump out there, and I looked at it and I said, all right, that should be Jesus in that image and not him. Oh, it was just me being a doctor. I mean, come on. Do you think en masse in any way that really upsets or crosses a line with Catholics, many of whom may have voted for Mr. Trump? What are your thoughts on that?
So the image, if you're talking about the kind of two sets of issues that went on this weekend kind of simultaneously with Pope Leo and with the image is more of a standard issue Trump scandal.
Yeah.
It's had the kind of standard issue, right? Here's something, right, that people find horribly offensive that then he comes up with kind of an absurd explanation for, right, which itself becomes kind of a joke and a meme.
Yeah.
Right. And mostly people are kind of left where they were in the first place. Right. I think that's likely to be the result there. And frankly, that's one that not just Catholics would be concerned about. Right. Many of Trump's most ardent supporters are evangelical Christians who don't believe in portraying Jesus in art at all.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Catholic churches are full of art and Jesus and all this. Right.
Yeah.
whereas many evangelical and fundamentalist traditions have real strong iconoclasm where they will not portray Jesus in art.
Yeah.
You'll often see some of these like pamphlets with like a blank face instead
yeah.
of Jesus.
Yeah.
Because and there were some old movies that were kind of like this. We only saw the back of Jesus because
yeah.
they were aimed at that kind of crowd. So, in fact, some of those people might be annoyed. But, again, I think that one is more likely to kind of parse out as a standard Trump scandal. I think the Pope Leo stuff is likely to have further ramifications.
Hmm. Interesting. Only because, hey, it's an American Pope, and this guy, you know, seems kind of cool, and he was only kind of saying what, as you point out, Dr. Ober, what many other popes have already said.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things with Pope Leo that make the situation quite different, I think, than the image thing, or even some of Trump's previous kind of exchanges with Pope Francis.
Mm-hmm.
So Pope Francis, of course, was Argentinian, right? Many Latin Americans have a negative view of the United States because sure. of the kind of historic legacy of the United States in Latin America, right, of sponsoring regimes and all this, and of, you know, kind of throwing its weight around the Monroe Doctrine. Now the Donroe Doctrine they yeah. used in the Venezuela intervention.
Yeah.
So there is that kind of. So it was easy to dismiss when Pope Francis would say things like this: "Is well, this guy doesn't really understand the United States,
yeah.
right? He's barely ever been there,
yeah.
which he had barely ever been here before becoming Pope, and he only visited here once as Pope and had a kind of fractious relationship with the U.S. bishops and other people here."
Mm-hmm.
Pope Leo is from the United States. Now he's lived himself in Latin America for quite a long time and outside the U.S., but he understands the U.S. quite well. And he's, in fact, one of the most popular American figures right now,
mm-hmm.
right? He is one of the most popular people in the United States, especially as far as, like, political or religious leaders go,
sure.
much more so than the president. And among Catholics, including among Catholics who are, you know, may or may not, you know, see eye to eye with, you know, whatever they perceive the Pope's politics to be and all this, right, not attacking the Pope, especially by somebody who's not Catholic and is
yeah.
a politician,
yeah.
right, is something that, you know, that they would kind of abide by. They wouldn't want to kind of gratuitously attack the Pope for saying something the Pope is kind of supposed to say,
yeah.
right? even if you think the war is justified as yeah. an American, right, it's be pretty easy to say, yeah, I could see why the Pope would not want to say, yeah, 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 let's have a war, right?
Yeah,
that
no, you're right.
Appropriate place for the Pope. So, right, and again, you know, Pope Leo is coming kind of from a position of strength,
mm-hmm.
right? He's, you know, new Pope, he's quite popular, right? He knows that Americans respect him and all this. Trump comes across as coming from a position more of weakness, as somebody whose polls are at an all-time low, right, in terms of approval rating. The war is like, has like 20% approval in mm-hmm. the country. So coming out and attacking the Pope multiple times, and again, especially using language that's a little bit strange, right, calling him soft on crime, which, again, sounds like he's running for mayor of New York rather than somebody who's the Pope, right? The Pope doesn't really have much jurisdiction over crime.
Yeah.
So given all of that, it doesn't seem likely to go very well in terms of, again, Catholics are a swing demographic that
yeah.
has swung in the last three presidential elections and will, you know, and seems likely to swing again. You know, although, I mean, again,
sure.
there's a long way
yeah.
to go in 2028, but even in the midterms,
yeah.
right, it doesn't seem like a group you want to kind of, like, upset too much.
No, no, no. Much thanks to Dr. Daniel Rober, Sacred Heart University Associate Professor of Catholic Studies. Dr. Ober, thanks again, and I'm sure we'll be in touch. Thank you, sir.
Okay, yes, all right, no problem.
Appreciate it. Dr. Daniel Rober there. Megan Portfolio, she of the Hartford Portfolio, Yankee Institute and all that. Ms. Portfolio, good afternoon. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I just haven't done my state taxes yet, so it's
oh,
making
really?
Me in a bad mood.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I
just don't understand. My salary is the same, but I owe money this year, so I have to redo it.
I owe the state about $400 a year the way I do, which is fine.
Oh,
you know, whatever.
It just annoys me. And so, as you can tell by my tone.
Yeah. I'm super stressed out,
but I still have till tomorrow.
Yes, I went to the post office this morning and to my accountants this morning, so he does a good job for me. I over-withhold, so at the end of the year on the feds, I get a nice check back.
That's what I do, too.
Because I kind of use that as, you know, where I'm going to pay for my new bathroom faucets, you know, and stuff like that, so... There we are. Hey, before we start talking about your bill about deep fakes, I've been accused of being a deep fake. I just read this story that broke last hour on the homeschooling bill. Like, what? As usual, they're telling us stuff, Megan, without really saying anything. I know,
great job to, you know, kudos to CT Mirror for breaking this, but. Once again, we're the boss. We're the people.
Yeah.
We're in charge.
Yeah.
We pay the bills, but we're always the last to know everything. I mean, it sounds like it could be good news for the homeschool community. It's just really frustrating, especially for someone like me that does this for a living.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I guess what they're saying is the way the bill forces DCF to reveal.
Yeah.
These cases, it could violate federal law. You would think they would iron these details
out. Well, you wrote about that, though. Didn't you just write about that in one of your pieces?
I wrote about that on the striking workers bill, which is another instance where if we implement a policy here, the feds can and they have every right to remove funding.
Yeah.
So I didn't catch this on the homeschool thing. This is amazing. But shame on them for not doing their homework up front. And do you know how many thousands of people they have stressed out this year because of this bill? Like, can you imagine? They're so stressed out. The kids are stressed out. The parents are stressed out because the lawmakers didn't do their job and didn't do their homework introducing this bill.
Before we talk about your deepfake bill, my gut feeling, Megan, on this is they may have looked at each other and said, "What are we, nuts? It's an election year."
Right. That's true too. But I mean, it's not dead in the water. That was only, I think that was SB6 that Oaks is looking at. There is still that other one that's out there. Mm-hmm. And according to the article, doesn't look like anyone's really, you know, giving us any information.
Shocking. That's just shocking. Yes.
I'm going to create some deep fakes now.
Yeah. with Eastern Connecticut Governor Austin, but I digress. Now you've looked at this deep fake bill. And for people that don't know, a deep fake is something you may see on the internet or on social media. AI can do some amazing stuff. There's one out there of Donald Trump doing a Queen song. Now, everybody knows that's a deep fake, but what are we trying to do legislatively here, Megan, with this? Explain what's going on.
So like you said, deep fakes, that's a lot of the AI we're seeing now.
Mm-hmm.
And AI is ridiculous. These are things I had never even imagined could exist growing up. I mean, I'm looking at I literally have to question every image and every video I see because you just don't know.
You don't know.
So this bill is trying to tackle manipulated images, audio and video 90 days prior to an election or a primary.
All right.
To try to stop the deep fakes from influencing election. And it sounds like, you know what, that's a pretty, you know, decent idea. You know, we do have an issue with this, and it is something that needs to be addressed. But the problem is, how far are we going to go with infringement? Like, I mean, we're in the era of no kings. So how far are we going to go with a bill that potentially could violate the First Amendment?
Yeah, and for example, I'm thinking here of, well, that's a convincing deep fake, and some people may say, you know, well, geez, that fooled me because I thought that was him or her or that candidate or whatever. But again, where do you draw the line? How do you define that? And what if you are doing a deep fake and in the name of, say, Megan, satire or trying to spoof somebody? Like, is that suddenly going to be outlawed?
Basically, it's going to be left up to the courts because the bill is so vague. So it's going to be left up to the courts and the attorney general's office.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Which, you know, and I'm not calling our present attorney general political, but that role is a political job. I mean, you run for office, you're in a political party. If I had my way, I'd have the attorney general just be like more of an appointed position.
Yes.
Instead of this whole political thing, because you know, we're human. Politicians are human. Mm-hmm. We all bring biases into everything that we do, even unknowingly. And it's not necessarily bad or, you know, trying to be an awful person, but it mm-hmm. happens. And can I count on an attorney general on either side of the aisle to hold the same standards for an opposing viewpoint? But so at the very, very high level, so they're trying to restrict all of these images right before elections. And it does totally sound reasonable. But the way they God, it's so funny. They have this phrasing and I almost forgot it for a second. But yeah. It's whether a reasonable person might think something is real. And now we're dealing with politics. So depending who you ask.
How many lawyers
can have a different definition?
Yeah, I was going to say I'll have an idea. I'll get four lawyers. I know you get four lawyers. You yeah. know, we'll put them in a room and say, okay, what's reasonable? Go, and we'll sit there and watch.
Well, what they're also trying to do is they're trying to stop the influence with the outcome of an election.
Oh.
And I'm not talking about like fringy, like weird, like far left or right behavior.
Yeah.
The whole purpose of political speech
yeah.
is to influence the outcome of an election.
Well, yes, yes, yes. And wouldn't
so
it...
So instead of targeting like the actual deception, we're actually targeting political debate.
None of this...
Because that's how vague the bill is.
Yes, and Megan, now you and I both know, none of this would be necessary if people took a breath when they saw something. And I hate to have to say it, but we're in a situation now where you have to ask yourself, okay, this may be confirmation bias for me. This may make me feel good. Is it real? That's all people just, oh, he couldn't have said that. Well, take a little time, you know, stop shopping online and take a look at, okay, let me do a cross-reference here, right? We all know what that is. Okay, let's put the phrase in that this deepfake just said. Now, wait a minute. I don't see it in the New York Times or the New York Post or the Washington Post or the Boston Herald, so it probably isn't out there. But again, most people you and I know, they're not going to do that.
I know, and it's so funny because, I mean, I'm Generation X, so I grew up without the internet. And then yeah. all of a sudden, you know, college, you know, my college years,
mm-hmm.
internet was introduced.
Ooh.
So we were always like joked, like, don't believe everything you read on the internet.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been embedded into our, like, don't believe everything you see on the internet.
Yep.
But I mean, I feel like it's getting worse than better. But this bill, so if you get busted doing this.
Yeah, what happens?
Fines. And if you do it more than once, there's actual criminal penalties.
So there'll be more penalties than there are for absentee ballot fraud in Bridgeport? Is that what you're saying? I'm sorry.
There's basically the penalty for anything is yeah. worse than ballot fraud in Bridgeport. Let's be honest.
All right, folks, check it out. The latest piece from our guest, Connecticut's deep fake bill tackles a real problem the wrong way. As usual here in the great state of Connecticut. That's me saying that, not Megan Portfolio. Megan, thanks. Appreciate it. Have fun with your taxes. Let me know how that works out, okay?
Oh, I'm sure you'll hear all about it next week.
Okay, thanks. Take care. Megan Portfolio right here on Connecticut Today.